It's time now for our Tuesday morning Peace Harbor COVID checkup. And joining me on the phone this morning is Dr. Bob Pelz. He is the Peace Health Oregon's head of infectious disease. He's on the Riverbend campus. Good morning, Dr. Pelz.
Good morning.
So tell me a little bit about your background quickly before we get started into some questions here about what you do with Peace Harbor or Peace Health.
So I'm an infectious diseases physician. So I did a medical school, a residency in internal medicine, and then a four-year infectious diseases fellowship. We take care of a variety of infectious diseases, HIV, hospital-acquired infections, and the like. And I'm also medical director for infection prevention for the hospital and for the 10 hospitals in the Peace Health system. And we've been very busy with COVID for 3 or 4 months now trying to prepare our response to that.
Yeah, I can imagine. What makes this variety of coronavirus more dangerous and impactful than others we've seen, like SARS?
So as you're probably aware, there are a number of different coronaviruses that have been circulating in the human population for centuries. There are four coronaviruses that account for about 15% of the common cold that people get every year. And over the last 20 years or so, there have been a couple of other coronaviruses. SARS, as you mentioned, the severe acute respiratory syndrome, and MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. SARS has a mortality rate of about 10%. MERS has a mortality rate of about 36%. And the common coronaviruses are rarely that dangerous. The reason that this coronavirus is such a problem is that it doesn't have the high mortality rate that you see with these other diseases. The reasons that we could contain SARS and MERS is that everybody that got those diseases got sick enough to be hospitalized where we had control over them. And there was not much community spread of those viruses because people got so sick so rapidly. Unlike this virus, where people sometimes transmit the disease without even knowing they've got it. And then when a vulnerable person gets infected with it, they can become extremely ill. So it's a paradox that the fact that it often doesn't make people very sick is really the reason that it's so dangerous.
Yeah, it doesn't sound real good. We're hearing a lot about potential cures or treatments. I heard about a vaccine this morning that they've already started including in human testing. What about some of the things that show promise, and what should people be careful about?
There have been a number of drugs that people have tried to develop and bring to the market. As I'm sure you'd expect, people are very eager to find something that can make a dent in this epidemic. There was some excitement about hydroxychloroquine, as I'm sure a lot of you have heard about it. It is effective in a petri dish, like in vitro, but when given to people, unfortunately, it seemed like it was disappointing. I know the University of Washington used to have it in a protocol that they used for managing coronavirus to include hydroxychloroquine, but a couple of studies have come out showing that unfortunately it doesn't really work, and there's some potential danger in using it. So University of Washington and many other leading hospital systems across the country have stopped offering it to patients with coronavirus. More promising is this drug called remdesivir, which just released some preliminary results of a clinical trial where patients were randomized to either get the drug or a placebo. The people that got placebo had about 11% mortality and versus 8% mortality with remdesivir. It's still not great. It's not a miracle cure, but people did recover a little bit faster, and it did seem like it made a dent in the mortality. It may be that we'll learn more about how to use that drug smarter and make it more effective. But that's probably the most promising treatment right now. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
As far as vaccines go, as you mentioned, there are a number of vaccines that are already being given to people. At this point, they're just giving small doses to people to make sure that the vaccines are safe. Vaccine development is a complicated process. The fastest vaccine that's ever been brought to market was the mumps vaccine back in the 1960s, and I think that took 4 or 5 years. So hopefully we can do better than that.
I was going to say, this is what makes this the scariest, I think, of everything, is because people are out there, they're getting it, it's spreading quickly, and there is nothing really in the near future that can say, okay, we're going to knock this thing out. What about antibody testing, something that should be widely offered? I mean, is that something that is a good thing? Does that give us any data at all?
Yeah, as is the case with so many things that we're using in this epidemic, The data are very young, very early in how accurate these tests are. There's such a need for them to be brought to the market that they're coming to market before we have a lot of information about them. It's really not clear yet whether having antibodies by any of the tests on the market means that a person can't get coronavirus. It's also possible that some of these community coronaviruses will cause a false positive test, so it'll look like somebody's immune to coronavirus when they've simply just been exposed to one of the coronaviruses that causes the common cold. If you tell that person that they're immune to coronavirus, then they go out without a mask on or go to large groups of people and they could potentially get coronavirus.
Well, is there any data out there that shows that that herd immunity would work in this kind of situation, or is it just something we don't know enough about?
Well, we probably don't know enough about it. I have to think that herd immunity will work. Again, it's probably too early to say. People recover from coronavirus because they develop an immune response. So if you get over the coronavirus illness, there has to be some degree of immunity that results. I would think that that would confer immunity to a subsequent infection.
Now you mentioned the idea of going out with or without a mask. I was in a situation yesterday where I am at one place and hardly anybody had masks on, and then I went to another place where everybody had masks on. In fact, they even handed them to you at the door. Do we know the data on, I mean, because at first it was saying, you know, medical people were saying, well, you know, it's good in the hospital, it's good in this situation where close contact, but maybe not so much outside. Then all of a sudden it switched to like everybody should wear one when they're going out. What's the current data on that?
I really don't think it's known or understood how important it is to mask. As you mentioned, the number of people that wear masks in different situations seems to vary dramatically and it seems to be pretty unpredictable. If somebody is an asymptomatic carrier of coronavirus, if they have a mask on, they're probably less likely to give the coronavirus to somebody else. But the virus is probably not just transmitted by inhaling a droplet. I think people have to be very aware of cleaning their hands, using alcohol hand sanitizer, or washing their hands to prevent transmission of this disease. We mask in the hospital, but there's really no data even in the hospital that having the healthcare workers mask really makes a difference in keeping us safe.
Well, and if you leave your eyes unprotected too, doesn't that also offer a place for the coronavirus to seep in?
Yeah, theoretically, any exposed mucous membrane could be a portal for the virus to get into the body. So, in the hospital, when we're caring for patients that we know to have coronavirus, eye covering, eye protection is a standard part of our personal protective equipment.
Now, the governor mentioned, I believe it was on Friday, she talked about how, you know, if things continue to go on by May 15th, we should see some easing of restrictions, some opening. I mean, and at the same time, she extended the state of emergency, which has more to do with finances than it does with the actual coronavirus. But is May 15th too soon to start reopening the state? What are your recommendations for the next, say, you know, 3 months on social distancing and wearing masks and things like that?
Well, I've had the privilege of being appointed by Peace Health to serve on the governor's medical advisory panel for coronavirus. We meet with the governor by Skype, by Zoom meeting a couple times a week. She has a group of, you know, very smart and talented epidemiologists and public health experts crafting the response for Oregon to the COVID crisis, and she's sought input from a variety of people in different disciplines from around the state. To provide advice from the public health and medical standpoint and give representation to what the healthcare systems are experiencing with COVID. I don't know that I could comment specifically as to whether we'll be prepared by May 15th. I think that's a reasonable date as long as we have a phased reopening and a careful reopening of the economy. We don't want to end up like New York City or some places in California or Italy by opening too soon and having aggregations of large numbers of people that could spread coronavirus to each other. We need to be able to do contact tracing. We need to be able to do widespread testing. People that are infected or exposed to infection need a way to quarantine themselves so they don't continue to spread it. But I think if those things can be achieved, we should be able to go a long way towards opening the economy back up again and do it safely.
Well, isn't there a sort of a fear that even opening it a little bit, all of a sudden people go, hey, we're going to go, say, for example, we're going to go to the coast. And then, you know, infiltrating the coast in large numbers, possibly causing a problem, even if it's just a small reopening?
Sure. I mean, it's going to be very difficult to resist that. I think I'm not the only one in Oregon that has cabin fever, and I get to come to work every day, which is I'm grateful for the opportunity to get out of the house. And I think once you open the economy a little bit, people are going to want to go to the coast and go to the mountains and do some of the things that have been taken away from us for the last 3 months. It just has to be done carefully. People continue to need to be careful.
But again, and part of that would be social distancing, obviously, you know, waving instead of shaking hands, things like
Correct.
That.
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Dr. Bob Pelz, he's the Peace Health Oregon's head of infectious disease. Dr. Pelz, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we appreciate your
time. Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Good information, and we thank you so much. That's
My
our
pleasure.
Peace Health, Peace Harbor Hospital COVID-19 update for this Tuesday morning.